to Romance Writers Therapy. That's Marty V.
That's me.
That's you.
That's me.
One of these days it's going to go off without a hitch. And
we'll never.
Separate people. I'm Kate Pryor.
We'll both be separate people.
We won't inhabit the same brain space.
It's the only way we will find our way through. It's very spooky.
It's the damn season. I'm a ghost and I'm just like hovering my head where your head is, and like our brains mesh that way.
Okay, well, when you put it that way, that is very creepy.
That's what I was imagining, and then I realized I have to say that out loud so that.
Yeah, because I was just imagining that my name was like Eduardo or something.
On very different pages. Who's Eduardo?
I mean, someone who knows how to not be awkward on a podcast, let me tell you. But not your friend Marty G. Nope, that's just not me.
So we were going to talk, we're talking about marketing and how that is.
It's like maybe
three jobs.
Yes, that sounds it's about right.
That if you're an indie author or a self-pub author, you end up taking on those jobs in addition to being an author.
Yeah, because
not just the writing. And
I feel like the whole like the best publicity, the best book launch plan is to write the next book. And I see that, I do, but you have to actually draw attention to the book you have in hand.
Well, okay, you're gonna have to explain that to me because it sounds very snappy. I like the way it sounds. It sounds like a hit tweet.
It also sounds like a get out of jail free card, right? Like my favorite part is the writing. So I should just write next book, right?
Yeah. It sounds like one of those things that you really have to think about before you realize, does this mean anything?
Well, and I also think that it's a holdover from a time gone, right? Ooh. Like I feel like it's something that people, you know, in the Wild West of publishing, they were just like, yeah, just get the next book out. Like, just keep pushing the algorithm, keep pushing the next book. You know, the readers are voracious. Just get the next book out, right?
All of today, I've been reading about how publishing isn't the same as it used to be. And
it is not.
Come to terms with
how
it's going to affect the industry if nothing changes. Like, something's got
to. What do they think needs to give?
It was mostly centered, the discussion was mostly centered around querying, but also that agents are burned out, editors are burned out, and everyone in publishing is burned out because you have people who are at the beginners, or not beginners, but like more, less senior jobs, I want to say, and they're doing the work of like 3-5 people.
Well, but like even looking, like we were just talking about entering into indie publishing and how you have to wear so many different hats to accomplish this job, right?
Yeah.
So even like burnout among indie authors is really high as well. But I do think that there is a level of control
at the indie level. Yeah. Because you are setting your own timelines.
Exactly.
You are the one who ultimately has control of what does happen and what doesn't. There's no one else pushing you to do it, and your job's on the line.
Exactly. Well, and then also, like, I'm sorry, my brain just went offline. But, like, we can also decide, like, okay, I don't want to kill myself, right? Like,
that's a very drastic.
I mean,
I would hope we all have that choice.
I really could use a different phrase there. No, you didn't. I just made the wrong choice.
You mean
not in staying alive. I love that choice for me. But
I'm cutting this.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. But no, like we have the choice to decide, like, okay, I'm gonna keep this day job so that I don't have to chase every dollar. And I don't have to create this backlist at like a breakneck speed. Right?
Yeah. I was just gonna touch on that. Like if publishing books is your entire source of income, then yeah, you are going to have to throw yourself into it, I think, a lot more. It's definitely the kind of thing that you don't say, actually, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to quit my day job so I can start this right now. mm-hmm. and it's gonna succeed immediately. It's definitely the kind of thing that you build up to, and then you go, I'm at a place where I can quit my day job.
Exactly. And
put all my time into this. I keep telling you, like, oh my gosh, look, my book is doing good. Ah.
Which is super exciting.
Exciting and weird and unexpected. I mean, when I say unexpected, I just mean, like, I was between my first book and my second book, I saw a kind of, I don't know the math words to say it, but like a specific kind of degree of slope upwards. Like, ah, yes, this is a trackable mm-hmm. type of growth. Mm-hmm. And then this one was like, actually, no, we're not following that.
That is so exciting. And so it's like exponential.
Yes, like it's so like
consistent to exponential. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was expecting consistent growth and I got better than that. But I'm like, okay, this really, I don't know what my expectations for the next one are going to mm-hmm. be then. Because I feel like I do have to rein it back in for the next one.
Well, but I think that there's just having a lack of expectations just kind of allows everything to be a reward, right? Yes,
that is,
and definitely. I think that we really see what we're looking for, right? So if you're looking for like success, you're going to see it, right? But like if you're setting your standard to a point that's making you question whether or not you're going to hit it, I think that you're going to see yourself. You're going to see it. You know what I mean? Like you're going to
commit yourself to a lot of anxiety. Exactly. Waiting for it to get to that.
And you're going to look for it everywhere you can.
And when it hasn't happened yet, you're going to feel like a failure, even though you may hit that point within the amount of time you want to hit that point.
Yeah.
Just watching the clock is bad for you. Don't do it. Watching the numbers is bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've taken a step back from like checking my dashboard and stuff like that too. And so now when I go in, I'm just pleasantly happy about it. Right. Like, oh, yay.
No, that is like, fantastic, you know,
and that's been really nice.
In the vein of marketing, I was mm-hmm. making this observation to my dad because I was talking to my dad about this somehow.
So you are talking to your family about your writing now?
It became a little bit unavoidable. The thing that I'm not quite able to talk about yet, because she said don't talk about it yet.
But gotcha.
Mm-hmm. I had to sign 300 copies of my book.
That's right.
And aww. So it was very hard to disguise the 650-pound boxes that ended up in the driveway. My dad was like, what's this about? And I'm like,
I'm selling drugs.
Please look away. Drugs would be lighter. Drugs would not.
Drugs would be so light. I mean, but if they were that heavy, that's a lot of equity in drugs.
Oh yeah, yeah. So
it's a lot of drug equity, as we say in this house.
Drug equity is my business, and
I want everyone to know. I don't do this. I don't do the drugs. So. And nothing made me sound more like I'm selling drugs like me telling people I don't sell drugs.
It is hard to, that's a hard hole to dig yourself out of. Like,
I know. Gosh, I'm on some sort of watch list now.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really boring watch, though.
Marty like this B's lady. House has the drugs.
Has the drugs. It's going to be a very boring watch. Like, okay, so she's taking her kid to school. They're going to the library now. Like,
they're selling drugs at the library.
No. God damn it, Kate. Nope. Not selling the drugs at the library. So.
It's the best place for them, though. No one would ever suspect it.
I mean, really, like, I could be Walter White-ing it. No one would suspect me.
Walter White, but he's like a preschool teacher instead of a high school teacher.
Exactly. And yeah. And, you know, a Midwestern mom.
So. And a Midwestern mom. A little more Fargo in this
I haven't
Breaking
seen Fargo.
Bad.
In this Breaking Bad.
Yeah. I don't know.
A little bit more. Oh, because the Midwestern accent. Yep. That makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It makes sense. Okay, so you're talking to your dad about this.
is I was talking to my dad about this, and I made the observation. All these books showed up, and my parents immediately said, "Are we rich?" And I went, "No, go away. Leave me alone."
They've been banking on you, okay? Mm. they're this talent is going to serve us all well, so.
Oh, yes. It's been made clear that I'm going to be the nursing home child.
You'll be the one supplying the nursing home?
Supplying a nursing home?
No, you'll be paying for the nursing home.
Like, I am the nursing home, or I'm the one choosing the nursing home?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm not decided on what...
Which option, if they get to stay in the house or not.
Well, so I made the observation is that this month, what I have earned, from the little KDP dashboard, is that I have made enough for this month's rent.
Oh, that's exciting. Kate, congratulations.
Thank you. But at the same time, because what I did with this timing, I don't think I would see these sales next month,
mm-hmm.
In the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not I've seen that I can make enough to survive on, immediately quit. I think it's see it consistently. Be sure that you can do this.
Also, you're making this without any ads.
Yes. No, that is... Sorry, my brain just went blank. I have not done any ads in
any
the
paid ads.
Sense.
Yes.
Any paid ads for this.
That's
I
really
I was thinking
cool.
about it. I was like... Because, okay, so we're going to go back and forth about our various marketing ideas and strategies mm-hmm. and things we've done for our books, things that we feel have worked and have not worked.
Mm-hmm.
So when I put out Meet Me at the Anvil, I knew that historical romance as a market is not as voracious as
monster romance. I also think that one of the great things that's working for you is monster romance is a growing market, but it's still niche.
Yeah.
And so, there is a lack of supply, And so you did a great job giving them what they're looking for. You know what I mean? And you laid the foundation by having another book out that led them to Orc.
Yeah. But also, the one thing that people keep saying to me is, I'm going to go read your other stuff. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't have much other stuff.
I mean, but Kate, that's so cool. You do have some other stuff. And they're reading it.
I know, but it's making me, weird and anxious. I'm figuring out how to, hurdle that.
Is it just anxious that you don't have more? Or is it anxiety, what will they think of the other stuff? Sometimes when people give me compliments, I do this great thing where I turn them around, right? Mm. And so
make
this compliment is now pressure. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that. Yeah,
a little
I get
bit of
that.
That. I'm kind of wondering if I should change it. Because the thing that I've been thinking, the last several months is mm-hmm. get the Orc book out and then do whatever I want for October and November. Because I did not mm-hmm. expect that many people would read this book.
No, I'm just not surprised that, people read it and they tell everybody else to read it. It is delightful. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Your stuff is delightful, too.
Okay, thanks.
I just feel
I know. I understand. I feel like I need to turn these things around, too. But you are welcome. I think you're awesome. So.
You mean you're awesome, too.
Okay, thanks. 30 minutes in which we just love each other.
Okay, we just throw the same compliment back and forth. It's like tennis.
First one
to drop the ball loses.
I am an expert complimenter, so, it's never going to
be. You are. You're so good at it. I wish I had your ability to compliment.
Okay. That's hilarious. How very meta of you.
No, it's not.
But there are so many times I'm like, okay, dial it back, Kate. Kate might feel uncomfortable with this much gushing. I fetter my engine for you.
Aw. That's the compliment.
That's the compliment. But okay, you were talking about...
God, I don't know.
Oh, people wanting more books from you, and you feeling like I don't have much of a list for you.
Yeah, and feeling like all this time that I had just kind of planned out to let myself kind of dick around and do that, now I'm like, oh, should I rearrange my plans so that I can put more books out faster?
Can you do that with, like, the way your brain functions towards your art and feel like you're not pushing yourself? Does that make sense?
Because, so for, like, the last 2-3 weeks, I have been kind of mentally kind of pushing around this carousel of 3 different projects I want to work on. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's kind of sucked all the joy out of 2 of the kind of silly things that I just kind of wanted to treat myself to. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's also, like, I feel like I'm really trying and pushing my head against the grindstone for this other, for the next book in the series, because I was like, I was gonna just let that one simmer for a while. It feels like maybe I could get really excited about it if I could figure out, like, a couple of the plot details that I haven't decided on yet.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about things.
No, I think that, I mean, I'm very interested in this.
So you, I think, a while ago, told me that it was your plan to become a full-time author.
Yes.
That is what I want. This would be your everyday.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you have been scheduling your books in a year-round kind of publishing as often as you can and getting things out as soon as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really part of the whole building a brand as a self-pub author.
Well, what I would like to do is to put out, like, 2 full-length books and 1 or 2 novellas and then, like, a short story anthology or something along those lines. Like, I would like to be putting out quite a bit, but in varying lengths. Because, yes, and there's the backlist, but then there's also a couple different entry points, right? So, like, All Roads to Carter being, you know, 12,000 words, somebody might pick that up that isn't going to commit fully to, you know, Truth or Dare at 35,000 words and then move on. You know what I mean? So it is, like, Kate, you're already living the dream, dude. The goal is to get them to go in for more. Right? Yeah, like, people stepping into your backlist is exactly what you want. And, like, you've mentioned before, like, it took you a day to read what took me forever to write.
So, yes.
Like, oh, there's that God. Aspect.
I feel like I'm definitely bitching about something I shouldn't be bitching about when right? people tell me, oh my God, I read it in an hour. And I'm like, please don't tell me that.
I'm so glad that you means enjoyed you loved it.
But, like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Read it slower.
Slower, do that for me. But yeah, so, like, my goal is to create something sustainable, right? My ultimate goal is Andrew doesn't work anymore. Like, I would like to just support our whole household. And, like, that Andrew would, you know, do things for publishing that opens up time for me to do more writing.
Yeah, like, right? That, because you have 5 or 6 hats on when you
exactly do that Andrew could take a couple of the damn could, hats.
Yeah. And then you can really put all, like, more of yourself into
exactly
the writing part of it.
Which is the part that, you know, I mean, without the writing
the part
done,
where love comes from. Like, that's and, what you wanted to do.
And you can't sell a book that's not written.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, that's definitely, like, a big part of my agenda. And it's actually shifted a lot of how I'm looking at marketing as well. Right? Mm. So, like, All Roads to Carter, she's not getting the same love as Truth or Dare. Right? I really am looking at that book as, I'm going to put this line out, catch a fish or two, and move them on to my other stuff. Right? And just not spend my time there right now because I have a limited amount of time and I need to get the writing done, right? Yeah. So I'm getting, like, all these little tasks done, you know, for, like, getting my anthology piece, like, completed and sent off. So, and I'm way ahead of deadline there. I'm like, it's not due until Halloween. So, like, I'm way ahead of deadline. But then it's done and I'm not thinking about it. And also, writing is such that, like, your deadlines, if they sneak up on you, you're kind of screwed, right? Because it just takes time, right? So, like,
yeah, and there's no fast forwarding through it.
There's like no fast forwarding. So, like, I have another deadline coming up for September of 2023, and it's just a 15 to 30K like small town anthology piece. So I'm gonna get Never Has She Ever Written, and then while that is like off with editors, I'm going to move on to that anthology piece and just get it done at the beginning of next year, because I just don't want to be worried about deadlines. Like, it just, my brain puts a lot more pressure on it. And there's times where like a deadline really helps my brain to just push out words, stop thinking about it, just make it happen, right? And like, that can be really helpful. But also, I just, it's one thing if it's like an editor I can push an appointment back with. But it's something else when, like, an anthology is being put together. I just never want to be noticeably challenging, right? Like, I want everyone to want to work with me again.
Yeah, like, you don't want to be the terrible customer.
No, that will stress me out, right? I know these things happen, and, like, people ask for more time with anthologies all the time. I just know that will stress me out. So I'm just going to like know my issues and work around them.
Yeah.
I don't remember where this rant came from, but like publishing scheduling. But yeah, I'm still planning on having the Love and Embezzlement series like completely published by like probably, I mean, my goal is July. Okay. That's a bit hard. I feel like that's a bit much to expect from myself. Also, I might decide to write Just Fake Married's sequel before finishing up all of Love and Embezzlement. I might just be like, I just need to get out of this world for a little bit, because that's the way my brain works.
No, and I feel you. And that's kind of like why I didn't want to immediately work on the third book for Claws and Cubicles.
Have you thought about like just doing like a 5 to 10,000 word short story?
Ooh. A couple of things. I do love the character Gwen.
I do too.
Who, you know, had the last chapter on the second book, kind of
her voice in that last chapter was pitch perfect. So good.
And I'm trying to figure out a love interest that I feel like would be a good match for her. And I'm really struggling with that because I don't know what kind of monster I want it to be.
Yeah. Well, because like all of my suggestions are much more expected than I think the direction you're going with it.
So something people keep messaging me is like, are you actually in HR? And
that's hilarious.
I'm not. But especially when they send it to like a line, send it paired with a line that I know, like, oh, I just bullshitted that.
That is amazing. Like when like your wording is so finessed that they're like, oh, she actually works in HR. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and like, so I've been kind of sitting here like, I kind of want to write about what I actually do in an office, and like have a character who's a graphic designer. And
okay, but I just had an idea. You should write like a 5 to 10,000 word short story about Randall.
Randall, oh my god,
you should.
Justice for Randall. Oh my god.
Do it! Like, you could have Randall come back as a demon. You should. Okay, for one thing, people would love it. You'd get to play around. You'd have a short piece that's not gonna, like, bog your brain down. And you can still, like, let your brain saturate with Gwen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I think something that I'm kind of, like, stuck on is because a lot of the ideas I'm coming up with feel too like grand high fantasy kind of feeling.
Yep.
Compared to what the rest of the series is, which is really grounded in that office setting, and I'm like,
yes,
like I don't want it to
mess. Oh my god, I'm sorry. I just got really, I had a line pop in my head.
Okay, that like, what is it?
Randall ends up back in the office, and like Lily is like, oh my god, Randall, like I thought you were sent to hell. And he's like, yeah, I worked my way up.
Oh my god. Screaming.
Okay, also, you could keep him human. Okay, you're going to have to cut all this if you take it. But, like, you could keep him human. And then you have a male, like, going for, if you're doing a hetero relationship again, but going for a woman monster. And that doesn't happen very much.
Okay, yeah, that might be interesting. See, the thing is, because I feel like one of the big pulls of monster romance is... Mm-hmm. See it so much is the interesting things you can do with genitalia.
Yeah, then I would make Randall a demon.
And I think that is because people want to see something new and interesting to like
kind I agree of
explore.
Yeah,
and I think the thing is like whenever I try to turn it around, I'm like, all right, so how can we improve on the vagina? And I do draw blanks. I'm like, yeah, I don't
it's
know.
Already perfect.
I mean, I guess I would have to research whatever they're doing with fleshlights these days, and I don't know.
That's a no thank you. I would rather not.
The last, you know me, I'm a purveyor of cursed memes, and some of the most cursed things my friends send me are like, you wouldn't guess that this object is a fleshlight, and it's like a football or a fucking lamp or something.
So one time we were playing Cards Against Humanity with our friends, Daryl, Kayla, Andrew, and my mom. And, she was like the, you know, ambassador of card or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And someone laid down fleshlight.
Oh no.
And I can't remember what it was in regards to. And mom picked it. And I'm like, everyone's losing their mind. Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? A flashlight? It totally works. I'm like, no, mama, that's an E, not an A. So, like, she was like, well, what is that? I'm like, you gotta look it up. No one here can say it out loud. Like, so she looked it up and she's like, oh, yeah. I mean, it still wins. It's still the best answer.
Oh, my God.
She's so funny.
Is it too old of a reference to be like the Marx Brothers joke where they're like, need a flash, not a fish, not a fish, not a flash.
Oh my God. I don't know the reference, but that's still really funny.
So tell me about things that you feel like you've done, things that were the right decision for your books.
Came to marketing. You mean as far as marketing?
Yes.
Well, I think that the way I found ARC readers was the right choice. I think that the way I built up my newsletter was the right choice.
Yeah.
Because then I had not only a couple of sales from my newsletter, but also I had people willing to be ARC readers from there. And so it kind of just made that job easier. Ooh, another thing was like asking a friend, like, hey, your ARC team, you and I write similar things. Would you be willing to ask them if they would be willing to, you know, get an advanced copy of this?
Mm.
Oh, another thing was asking Roxy Noir to read it and give me a blurb, which she did, and it was brilliant.
On that, like, idea, or that thought, although it is absolutely outside of my power, I do believe the thing that boosted my sales most for this book was definitely due to Ruby Dixon sharing it on her page.
That was huge. Okay, but
I don't think it would have gotten very far if she hadn't done that.
That's such a good point. But at the same rate, like, you found, like, ARC readers within her sphere. Like, you still put the legwork in.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, lightning struck, and it was awesome.
Well, so I mean, I think a lot of it is, like, you are setting a ball in motion. You don't really have full control of it, and it's kind of what... When you build your ARC team, I think people who really love it and people who are book bloggers, book reviewers, who are excited to work with you because it's, you know, when they get a book and they get to, if they're a content creator and then you're giving them something that they can make content off of, then especially if they really love it, I think that's just your winning combination. But that's also something you can't manufacture.
And then also someone like... you know, a content creator that's going to have a lot of clout, they're going to be harder to reach, you know?
Yeah. Or schedule you in. It's, you do want to, like, okay, so personally, I try not to focus on follower count when I was building my ARC team, you know, I'm saying, like, people who told me that they loved the first book and that they recommended it to their friends
mm-hmm.
were very important to me because,
absolutely,
you know, that tells me, hey, you're going to read this book and you're probably going to recommend it to your friends too. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of legwork right there. That's yeah. very valuable. Because, yeah. like, we keep reading on how all these publishers who buy books or buy celebrity books or people who they have a ton of social media followers and they talk about a book and they try to sell a book on through their social media and then no one buys it or not enough people buy mm-hmm. it. And I think we're starting to come to terms with what a vanity metric is that yes. social media, it can move books, mm-hmm. but it the circumstances on which it does are require a lot more introspection. Like if you're just following like let's say there's an account on Instagram and all they do is post very pretty pictures of books and mm-hmm. they don't really post like maybe in-depth reviews and people follow them because pretty aesthetic pictures of books and
yeah
but the they don't read the book. Post oh like okay but so like the Pie Lady that you love so much
oh my god
she reads the book though
she does and she does a great job but like I am more likely just to look at the pies right
yeah, like okay. Okay, so like, you don't feel, like, compelled to go read the books that she talks about.
I don't know if I've read any that she's recommended, that she's, like, talked about. I just get very excited seeing how she recreates the cover with the pie, right?
And so, okay, so here, this isn't a book, but, like, the last thing that I can remember being prompted to buy, and when mm-hmm. I say prompted, I mean someone tweeted about it. It said, oh, it was the Yiddy bras, which is
oh yeah
Lizzo's brand.
How do you feel about it?
She just put out. I have not received them yet, but I did buy some.
Okay, tell me what you think. Because I have, like, not started... I've not restarted my Fabletics because, gosh darn it, it was so hard to get the damn thing canceled. But, like, I really want to try them. They look fantastic.
See, okay. They... So I think the website for Yiddy is janky as hell. I kept trying to be like, I'm just going to do the more... Like, so, like, it offers you... You can buy the bra for $60 now, or you can sign up for a subscription and get the bra for $15. Mm-hmm. But the subscription itself is like $50. So I was like,
yeah,
I'm just going to buy it for $60 and mm-hmm. save $10. I kept trying to do that, and then it wouldn't let me click on that to add it to cart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it was so janky. So I ended up doing the subscription thing, and that was the only way it would let me buy the bra.
Well, and I'm actually thinking, like, because one of my friends has... Fabletics, she's just really good at remembering to, like, you know, on the second yeah. of every month, like, postpone this.
Yeah.
Right?
I think I'm just gonna
be like, hey, here's $60. Will you buy this for me? But I had to yeah. make a phone call and talk to someone. And, like, I had to sit on hold for a while, too, to end that subscription. And that is quite the cost for me. Like, I don't want to. Okay, I'm sorry. We should probably come back yeah. to marketing. Okay,
the point I wanted to make was that yeah. I saw someone tweet about it. This is the first time I heard about Yiddy, and I was in that moment of like, yeah, I would like a new bra, and I would like it to be supremely comfortable. Mm-hmm. Someone was like, damn it, they're comfy. I didn't want them to be comfy, but they are. And I was like, okay, sold. I'm going to go buy a bra, even though the process was more difficult than it normally would be, I think. So like, I see people say things like, you need to post, like, people see an ad for a product 7 times before they mm-hmm. buy it. But I think also it is people on the ground level of just out there saying, yeah, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
That is more convincing than anything else.
I agree. Also, I was listening to a podcast and she was talking about how, like, instead of paid ads in the traditional sense, she does influencer ads. Right?
Okay, yeah.
But, like, she's like, I don't go for big names. I go for, you know, someone with, like, 10,000 followers but has high engagement.
Mm.
Because, for one thing, they tend to be cheaper, but also the engagement tells me, like, they're actually... These are people that don't just, like this celebrity's post and keep on scrolling, right? There's more return for that, yeah. And then also, like, that's been kind of something in the back of my mind as, you know, with everything with social media is, like, or even, like, with the newsletter. Like, yeah, I could have a lot more people on my newsletter, but are they engaged with it?
Yeah, and, like, So that's why you kind of weed through your newsletter and you unsubscribe people who don't open your emails.
Yeah. Because I don't want to pay for a newsletter that, you know, is 12,000.
Being wasted on someone.
Yeah. 12,000, you know, subscribers, but only 500 are engaging. Like, I'd rather just stay with my engagement and let it grow more slowly and organically. At this point, that's my goal with this, at this stage, is to let it grow more organically. I might do a promo or two throughout the year. Because obviously a lot of these people I did get through promos and they have become engaged readers. So like they're still worth to doing those like newsletter promos, but you know, just that's kind of where I'm at with it is I, with all of my social media, with my my newsletter subscribers, like I just want people that are actually involved. And we'll actually talk, like, actually read the book, actually talk about the book. It was M.K. Milford. She was talking on, I want to say, yeah, she was on the Rebel Author podcast. And she was talking about how, like, do not underestimate the moments someone else goes viral talking about your book, right? And I'm like, yes. Oh, that is so cool. And essentially that's, like, what happened for you was someone else talked about your book, and then Ruby Dixon was like, oh, that's delightful, right? Like,
yeah, because what happened was that it's Anais's reading, and I hope that I pronounced that correctly.
How do you spell it?
A-N-A-I with the two dots above it. S is reading. Anyway, so she reviews books, and yeah, and so because she made an adorable little graphic for
she did too
my book, and you know, she put some words on it, which caught Ruby's eyes. I think the words that were specifically was do the Vectal.
That was which so is funny.
Referencing one of Ruby's characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, that magic.
Yeah, that's okay. But that's, I mean, that's so cute. Like, the way she brought in other fandom. But that is also something I think you do a really good job of is understanding how to boil down your product into these like very like snappy
tropification.
What?
The tropification of books.
Yeah, but like you do it in a way that's so cute, right? Like well, for one thing, like this is not there it was Love Laugh Lit. You had a line about it being not like OSHA approved. And like your use of the fainting goat for Meet Me at the Anvil was fantastic. And like, so you're really good at like finding these little details to pull that I think are really good hooks. Do you know how your brain does that? Or is it just completely on accident?
Well, so I can
tell not you on accident, but intuitive.
For both of those books. Well, for the OSHA thing, unfortunately, I'm extremely online. And I follow a lot of OSHA related memes accounts.
I did not even know it was a thing.
I know. Most people don't know it's a thing, but
that is so funny. Okay.
And the fainting goat thing is I wanted there to be a goat in the book.
Uh-huh.
It needed to be like a goat like a little more than I could.
Well, it had to serve a purpose.
Here's the thing. Tessa Dare loves goats.
Okay.
That's the reason there's a goat in the book.
Because it was a love letter to Tessa Dare.
Yeah, the book's just a love letter to Tessa Dare. I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, maybe if I just talk about the goat enough, she'll read it.
Well, either way, like, the goat made my friend read it. Like when I asked my friend, like, hey, do you see this on KU? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, by the way, you should totally read this. You'd enjoy it. She's like, oh, yeah, she already had me at the fainting goat. Like, so, and she loved it. So.
Yeah. And like, you're telling me these examples and I'm like, I don't think I had anything like that for the orc book. Because like, I really struggle.
I'd have to scroll through your Instagram. Because there were a couple things that I was like, that's so cute.
I think the thing I just keep saying for that one is that they're not allowed to have a mating bond at work. And, like, I feel like that's not great marketing because that's kind of not even really what the plot is. Because the plot, like, that sounds like something's holding them apart, but it's like, yeah, it's kind of loosely there.
But, like, your Dungeons and Dragons plus the hating game equals, like, that's super cute. The whole, like, office romance but make it monsters is super cute. Big nerd energy, that was a really good one. Idiots to lovers flirting through IT problems, like... Girl, you just don't
people
know how
really
good you
loved
are.
The idiots to lovers thing. Like, when I posted the cover reveal,
people love it.
People just kept saying, idiots to lovers. Yes.
And yeah.
Like, I mean,
we understand, though. We do get it.
A little bit just me preemptively calling my characters idiots so that no one else can call them idiots.
Aw. But I think, like, you have an intuition about these things that, like.
I'm just turned more.
I don't know. I'm trying really hard to, because I feel like it's like a step back and be abstract, right?
Yeah.
And that's like one of the ways that it works, you know? So I'm trying to do the same thing for Just Fake Married, but it's just, you know, it's even like in writing copy is not where I feel like I have the most room to grow in writing copy.
I think so many people struggle with it, and me included.
Yeah, but you do a good job.
Like, I mean, when you read my, you helped me with my synopsis too, so.
Yeah, that's fair. It might just be like a too close to it sort of thing.
Yeah, I think especially when you're very deep in it.
I'm hoping that it's easier with Just Fake Married because it has been so long since I've been working with it. Which, I mean, come the 21st, I kind of just want to start, like, I want to have it out to ARC readers in a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, all these things are coming up. And so, just have a little bit of tweaking to do and then it gets to go off into the world and be a little butterfly.
You've been working on that thing for so long. It's going to be amazing to see it out in the world.
It will be very cool to see it out in the world. It has been so long. Like, the big thing I'm trying to work on with, like, my brain is, like, not getting weighed down, right? Because I can be such a goal-oriented person by nature, and I'm highly competitive. And so, like, just kind of not letting those aspects get in the way of, like, me just loving my books.
No, I get you. Mm-hmm. I had a thought, and I'm trying to, like, track it down again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was the advice that people give to write the copy for your book first. It, like, write the synopsis or the blurb. Something that, like, really locks in those tropes, that kind of the marketing edge of it.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really helpful to kind of have something to hold on to and remember to stick to while writing your plot or when you're writing a book, because you can refer back to that and change it as you need to, but also kind of remember the core selling element of it that
got me excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the issue, I'm just so vibey with my ideas that, like, I'm like, I don't know. It's like they're friends. And then they pretend to be married. You know what I mean? Like, I just tend to be so vibey about everything that, like, because I've thought of that too, but I don't have a thought until I'm in it, right? Until I'm, like halfway through a book. I'm like, oh, okay, now this is how I tie everything together, and I'll go back and fix it, you know? So it's like, maybe that will change for me at some point, but it's not there in my process at this point.
I think when I'm first starting out with an idea, I'm really focused on bringing elements that mesh together really well to build the foundation of the story. You do a lot of, like, exploratory writing. Like,
I do.
And I feel like I need somewhere to jump off from. I can't just start and then write and then let things get to know each other. I have to, like, know where they're both starting from.
Where I'm, like, the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So right. Like, I can't know what I'm thinking about until I'm physically putting pieces together.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I have to write a synopsis for Just Fake Mary, too. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, you know, I think it's a skill that is there. Like, it's a skill I can learn. There's no reason why I can't. But, like, it's just, like, there are just different aspects to who we are that, like, are intuitive, right?
Yeah.
And I think that it's just not an intuition that's, like, easy for me.
I think it's also kind of, like, when I was in film school, which is such a bad idea, don't go to film school. Just don't. Blanket statement, don't. I took a class on screenwriting. Yeah. Not worth it. Get on a film set. That'll teach more. And you won't be graded on it. You'll just get fired.
And you'll just get paid.
You'll either get paid or get fired. Which, win-win. The class was like on screenwriting, but something that we did a little unit on was on how to do an elevator pitch, which is this idea that if you ever get stuck in an elevator with like a TV executive,
yeah,
you have to be able to blurt out with full enthusiasm 30 seconds worth of grab you plot that is gonna make someone say, yeah, I'd buy that, and then they leave the elevator having bought your plot.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is like the worst thing in the world to me. I hate the idea of that.
It is anxiety inducing, that's for sure. I have heard it recommended to like have an elevator pitch for your story. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just like
a synopsis,
maybe
is an elevator pitch in a way.
Yeah.
Like it's like, here's the boiled down good best parts of my story.
Mm-hmm. And this is where the juice is at. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that part of it is that because I discovery write, when I go to do the copy, it's almost like I have too many blocks. And then I also don't feel like I give myself enough time to really work on it. I don't know. But like, you know, the more you do anything, you build a muscle, it'll be fine. It'll get better. Yeah. I will learn.
The thing that always trips me up is like when I'm trying to write a synopsis of something that I'm like, all right, I'm just going to summarize what happens in each chapter into one sentence. But then it feels like, I feel like I'm including a bunch of things that are boring or unimportant.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah,
I don't know.
I also try to look at like when I go to sit down and do like blurbs or, you know, a graphic or something. I try to look at T. Taylor's 7-figure author. Is that what it is? Anyway.
Yeah.
Where she talks about... why can't I think of it? What is her actual phrasing? I can't remember. Well, the book is really good. But it's like essentially like, what is it within the trope that makes the trope delicious? Right? Mm. Like, give that to your reader.
Okay, so like the only one bed is the forced proximity. They might get touchy on each other.
Exactly. Yes. Well, and like if you have enemies to lovers, but you never give me a reason why they don't like each other, or you make them like after, you know, chapter one, all of a sudden they're friends, they're resolving their issues. Like that's not enemies to lovers. That's not what anyone's here for. Right.
Yeah. And it's like you actually need to fulfill the tropes that you say you're.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
exactly.
That is important.
Yeah. The juice needs to be there. Right.
And yeah, so, it's important not to mislead your readers to be like, oh, okay, this book has these things, and then it doesn't.
Exactly.
It will make people mad.
Or, like, trying to, like, shoehorn a trope that's hot right now into something that it doesn't belong just to be able to say it has this trope. You know what I mean? Like it actually matters how you use these things, right?
Yeah.
And so I try to think about... universal fantasy. Bam! Okay.
Anyway. There was this episode on Columbo.
Okay. I love your references.
I only watch old things.
I know.
Somehow,
let me tell you about the Marx Brothers.
And with it, and hip with the kids.
And hip with the kids.
I also have the soul of a 90-year-old man.
Okay, so tell me about Columbo.
He's just so pretty. I like his hair.
I do like his hair. He has a great voice, too.
He does.
He does.
Oh, man.
Great voice.
Like, I watched like 6 episodes in a row, and I think my like New Jersey intensified.
I
know he's like a New
York. Love that for you.
LA cop, but like he has the.
We all know accent. He is not LA. Like,
I know. It's like
I did not know he was in LA, but cop. I would have definitely like put him over in Jersey just like by his speech and the way he looks.
He's
he
Italian.
Does not look like LA. Okay, so come on, Jersey, anyway, tell me about like, Columbo.
So, the episode like starts off and it's like this woman, she's an author, she's a psychologist, and she's writing about like the universal female fantasy. She's a sex therapist, that's what it was.
Okay.
She, or a sex psychologist.
I feel like this is very obviously written by men, but moving on.
I know. See, it's one of my favorite things about old television. It's like, we're taking the opportunity to be very horny, but in the weirdest way possible. We're explicitly horny and yet not.
Yeah. Okay, it's so.
Place in Star Trek. I just.
I love that about Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah. God, there's an episode that's just straight up called The Naked Time.
That's like, so funny.
Like, goddamn. I know that this is like supposed to sound philosophical, but it does not.
It does not. And that's not how they meant it. Okay, but tell me anyways, about Columbo.
Columbo? You don't want to hear about Star Trek?
Not when you're trying to tell me about Columbo.
Columbo. Anyway, so this woman's a sex therapist. She's a murderer, but apparently she's written a book, and like that's kind of the premise, the starting point of this episode. And the universal female fantasy about sex is to be a concubine in a, like...
Wow. Really?
Harem kind of thing. Like, that sounds like all the stereotypical things, but, like, I'm trying to quote what they say in the show.
That's so funny. Because I just like, don't think that would... If
like, that's real specific, and I don't think that's everyone.
And I don't feel like, I feel like it'd be a very small group of women that if I was like, hey, what's the universal female fantasy? I think it could be a really small group of women that would even say that out loud. Like, right? Like, even if that was their fantasy, they probably wouldn't think that was everyone else's. And if it's your fantasy, like, there is no judgment. Definitely not yucking anyone's yum. But like...
Well, I'll yuck a little bit of Orientalism, but...
But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. You were continuing about universal fantasy, and I just universal needed to put that in there.
Right. Bringing it back, guys. This is why we're the professionals. Because I know. Okay. So when like looking at writing blurbs and stuff, I do look at like the universal fantasies within the story, and just hint at them like hard. Right. So like. In Truth or Dare, there's the handsome stranger, there's, you know, the forbidden desire, there's the forced proximity, there's the only one bed, there's, you know, like, and then also, like, he has a secret. Like, you know, there's these really, like, fun little things that, like, as a reader, I know they excite me, they light me up. And so just making sure those moments are inside the little, you know, little snapshot you're giving people.
Yeah.
And so that's really how I start with, like, actually sitting down and writing my blurbs.
Yeah. I think when I'm trying to, like, pull quotes from the story and, like, to make cute little graphics with them. Thank you. I'll try. I'm definitely, like, really just going to moments that I enjoyed the most to write and to reread. Because there's definitely always, in every book I write, there's, like, the moments that I dislike rereading because it's usually a... Okay, we got to get the plot from one place to another, and I'm just going to get it done.
Kind of. I love your gremlin voice for that.
That is
just going to die.
Turn the sound, the texture of that voice into, like, just an overall sensation, and that is what I feel reading those chapters. I'm like, don't enjoy this. And then I guess, I feel like that's something that happens in every book. I want to believe it happens in every book, that there's just a chapter of just get it from here to there. But, you know, that just
I don't have that sense.
Being hopeful.
I don't have that sense for me personally. And maybe, like, but you also write linear as well, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. But, like, maybe for me it's because, like, when I sit down to write, it's very rare that, like, I know where it's going. right? Like, I'll kind of glance above, know where I've been, have a vague idea of what the end looks like. And my point is every scene I write is like me getting from here to there. Like every yeah. single one. So like, cause you've mentioned before, like I just pull like the things that I enjoyed writing. And I'm like, I just don't know if I have moments that I enjoy more than others.
Okay.
But then also like, it's hard for me to decide like, okay, this is, cause like, okay, Truth or Dare, I really enjoy the way it opens. They're meet cute, right?
Right.
And I can't pull 1,000 words. You know what I mean? So it's like, what within those 1,000 words should I pull? But then I feel like the magic of that meet cute is lost without the whole scene, right?
Yeah.
And so I move on. Yeah. So I move on to a different section, and there are plenty of things to pull, but it's always trying to identify your hooks.
You know, that's something that like every Friday Kiss prompt, you know, when I do that on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I never remember to do it. And by the time I actually have like the available time to do it, it's too late in the day. Everyone's done with Friday Kiss.
So here's the thing. The Facebook group posts the prompt on Wednesday. So Wednesday, okay. You go, you look at the prompt. You have all of Thursday to search your story for the word that is the prompt.
Uh-huh.
And then pick out that part. I always end up editing it down.
Okay.
Like, I cut and paste a couple of paragraphs into Twitter, and I save it as a draft so that the only thing I need to do is hit send on Monday morning at 9 a.m. because that is the way you will get the most engagement with your tweet.
You mean Friday morning at 9 a.m.
Friday morning.
Yeah, you don't do Friday Kiss on Monday morning.
Oh, Monday. Did I say Monday morning?
You did.
You will get no engagement that day.
That is the only way to get the best engagement.
Well, okay, so
Kate's leading everyone astray, so she's the only one there on Friday.
Yes, post on Monday. Monday Kiss.
Oh, guys, did you know
that,
like, Friday Kiss is best on Monday? Oh.
Yeah, that's when, because everyone comes late to the party, you know.
Yeah, everyone. It's, like, fashionable.
Yeah. So. Get my way more likes on your tweet.
But that is awesome information to share. Thank you so much.
Well, I did tell you my diabolical plan, which was to spend all of my Fridays in the Friday Kiss tag.
Yeah.
And going and engaging with, if not the Friday, the Friday Kiss prompt tweets that people had posted,
mm-hmm.
but to... It was kind of identifying these are people in the romance reading and writing community that, you know, are just interested in romance. And this is an easy way to find those people.
Yeah.
And that's the people you want to, like, go follow. These are the people you want to engage with their tweets so that they'll engage with yours. Mm-hmm. Make friends. Like, don't do it in a superficial way. I'm saying, like,
no,
like everyone's tweet and then just expect everyone to follow you. No, you got to do it in a way that's like, I really love this story. I can't wait to hear more of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, things that encourage people.
With like social media, because we were just talking about how engagement matters more than numbers, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the advice with social media is like, create authentic relationships.
Yeah,
right.
And that is hard to do, and it is tiring because to like emotionally put yourself out there all the time is mm-hmm. draining. But you building bonds with people is a really good way to,
yeah,
because building community is that's your network. That is these are your people, and you don't have people. Okay, so I had a friend who wrote a book, posted the book to Amazon. And then complained a bunch to me about how the book wasn't selling. And mm-hmm. I kind of went, you know, I talked a little bit about the publishing industry with them. And I kind of got the vibe that they were not really friends with anybody in any mm-hmm. book communities because they weren't putting themselves out there. They weren't trying. And I got the sense that they just expected people to be able to magically happen upon the book.
Yeah.
And
well, like, and, like, there was a time and place for that, but that time and place was, you know, 2012. Like, it's a different time now.
I think there's just absolutely a world of difference between nailing a bulletin up in, like, mm-hmm. anywhere, like, to a random telephone pole and expecting people to be able to find it versus, yeah. like, telling people, go tell a friend about this book. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, something along that lines. Because one is just sitting there and the other is actively going out there. And it is, people don't discount other writers as readers, because that writers is the are truth. So yes. much. So people keep making the joke that readers just, or writers are just selling books to other writers. No, yeah, there's no readers here.
We were talking about that too. Yeah. We talked about that a couple episodes ago, where it's like, as authors, it feels like we're just selling each other our books.
Yeah, but also, and like we as absolutely authors, are.
We're, absolutely. But also as authors, we're talking about books. We are gathering our own readership. And if we think that this is a book they'll like, we'll tell them about the book, you know? And mm-hmm. so like it is still its own. It is very valuable. Like it is so valuable.
Yeah. And I do think it's the kind of thing that takes time.
It does.
You know, and I don't, and I know that's the answer nobody wants to hear. That these things take time, and mm-hmm. growing a following that, like thinking about it as a following is like kind of gross, mm-hmm. but like growing a yeah, community a of people.
A readership makes me feel better.
You know, people, a network of friends mm-hmm. and mentors and people who want to help you and want to be helped and like that, all mm-hmm. that takes time.
Okay, and so, yeah, we are leaving. We're out of here.
Sorry, we left Anna Kate, on where can they for find like you? An hour.
I know,
they can
I know.
Find me at By Kate Pryor mm-hmm. on TikTok, Instagram, or Twitter. Or you can go to my website, kate-pryor.com.
And you can find me at...
I'm Marty.
Marty V. Author at TikTok, Twitter, Instagram... You can go to my website at martyv.com and sign up for my newsletter on the little pop-up. And we have books out you can read, because we're awesome.
We do have books out. You have Truth or Dare out, which is a lovely story. It's an office
it
romance.
It is lovely. She's so
I've
cute.
I've got The Orc from the Office. It's also an office romance, but that's with right. monsters.
Yeah.
And also, and, I forgot.
All Roads to Carter is coming out on October 21st.
Woo!
I know.
It's going to be fun.
We have so much happening. We're like the coolest people ever.
We are.
And you knew us first, listener. We're so cool. And bye, listener. Bye.
Bye. Okay.